Technorama episode 320 for October 5th, 2011. All pooped out.
Well, here goes nothing.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Now that the Fermilab Tevatron is shut down, I'm gonna buy it. But where can I put it?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for October 5th, 2011. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. OnStar may have stopped tracking you, but that didn't stop us. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time and all that lovely data from your car, Facebook, or anyone else. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm feeling tracked.
You've been tagged like an animal on Wild Kingdom.
Whenever I hear somebody mention tagging an animal, I keep thinking of Ren on Ren and Stimpy, putting the thing on his ear.
Come back.
How was your week?
It's been good, man. Not too bad. Been really busy fighting with SharePoint at work.
We had a good interview with T and Pip about their book, Phoenix Rising.
Mm-hmm. We sure did.
And that will be coming out shortly. So if you're listening to this on the interwebs, on podcast form, you should be getting that one soon, too. It's going to get interesting. I should mention that there are going to be a couple of weeks in October where I will be business traveling again. So our schedule may be a bit broken up. Yes, it's true. Job gets in the way. But for now, let's have some fun. Coming up in this episode of Technorama, we've got a motorcycle with an unusual fuel. And if they can do it to rats, then humans must be next. And finally, tech superstars in an interesting genre. All that and more coming right up.
You know one thing I hate? That's internet memes. There's nothing worse than a bunch of people trying to outdo one another by doing the same thing. You know, we used to do that when I was a kid. Of course, it just consisted of punching each other in the face. Well, nowadays, we got things like the LOL cats and whatnot. You know, these are thousands of dollars put into this internet invention, and this is all we have to show for it? This is what we're going to leave behind for generations to come? My brother Herman sent me a video the other day, and he said it was a box of puppies. I thought, okay, who doesn't like a box of puppies? I started watching it, and it was that Rick Astley feller. I thought I clicked on it wrong and got the wrong video or something. Turns out Herman had to tell me about this Rick Astley feller and what Rick Rowland was. At first, I thought Rick Rowland was something that sounded dirty. After he had to do all that explaining, I guess that kind of took the wind out of Herman's joke. Herman 0, Spanky 1. Anyways, as time goes on, it seems like some of these memes are getting dumber and dumber. If I see another dramatic hamster face or all your base picture or even another Star Wars kid, I think I'd rather just take another punch in the face. And then we'll upload that to YouTube.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong, Ensign Harry Kim, Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
As soon as he said dramatic hamster, you hear the Star Trek Voyager thing. Dee, 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 dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, the drums.
Oh, Spanky, maybe you could fill in for Andy Rooney now that he's done.
That's right.
Farewell, Mr. Rooney. You've been on the air long time. Did a good job. Speaking of long time and good job, we have a wonderful chat room with us tonight. We are here live every Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time. We have a live chat room going.
Oh, crap,
at least
I'm not
think
in it.
They're alive. We have AD Doctor, Ben Vaughn, Carrying the TARDIS, Claudio M, Dalek Tim, Dan D Man, Deb Drupp, Gru, Mad Marv, You Killed Rory, and ZML 2008. I'm sensing a Doctor Who theme.
Oh, was that a spoiler?
Saturday night was Doctor Who. What, You Killed Rory?
Yeah.
No, he died like every other episode in this season.
Oh, that's right.
He was like the Kenny South Park of Doctor Who. Oh my gosh, You Killed Rory!
Yeah.
We also have a birthday calendar going on. If you haven't been there, go to chuckchat.com/wiki.
If you have a birthday.
If you have a birthday. Well, so everybody's got a birthday. What are you talking about?
What if you were hatched?
No, doesn't count. Then you'll have hatching day.
I did see that on Mork and Mindy, so it must have been true.
Yeah, everything on TV is true to you. October 6th is John Durhold. October 9th is two birthdays, Itsuku Rumki and Mario from New Jersey. October 10th is Victor Cahill and Garrett Rafal. Same day, Bruce Barr on October 11th. Happy birthday to all of you. And if it happens to be your birthday and you're not on the birthday calendar, why not? Go over to chuckchat.com/wiki so we can invite you, wish you a happy birthday next year. But in any event, it's your birthday. Happy birthday. Have a great day. Spend it with family and friends.
Is that the real Mario?
Yeah, I don't know when Luigi's birthday is, though. Are they twins? Why wouldn't...
Are they twins? I don't know.
I don't know. Are they cousins? Brothers? Friends with benefits?
They're the Mario brothers, but he's named Luigi.
But that doesn't mean whether they're twins or not. Well, we are way overthinking this.
Yeah, wouldn't their last name be Mario if they were the Mario brothers?
Yeah, so why is one Mario and one Luigi? Is his name Mario Mario?
I think it's lost in translation somewhere when it came over to the States. Mario Mario.
Want to give a little bit of quick feedback. We had Technorama Day on Saturday, October 1st, at least in the U.S., because it was 10-1 or 101. And listener Michael Bergstrom had this to say on Google Plus. He said, my wife commented that today was 5 in binary or something like that, right? I love that quote.
He's right.
All thanks to overhearing me listen to you guys. It was a proud geek moment.
And I would be proud to.
Keep playing that Technorama and share the love. Confuse them. That's the best way.
Technorama should be used like one of those marriage tests in a magazine. See if you're really meant for each other. If your spouse gets into it, you're in good shape.
The Cosmopolitan Technorama.
That's right. Test. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
At first, I thought you were going to say it was like medication. It should be used topically. And then I had all these side effects.
Sparingly, maybe.
Yeah. May cause blindness, death, unconsciousness, fits of laughter. Didn't we do something like that once?
Maybe.
Let's go on. On this day in history for October 5th, 2011. It was on this day in 1582 that, this day doesn't exist in the calendars in Italy, Poland, Portugal, and Spain because of the implementation of the Gregorian calendar.
Would that be not on this day? It was today in 1869 that Saxby Gale devastates the Bay of Fundy. What did you give me this for?
Want me to do this one? It was also today in 1869 that the Saxby Gale devastates the Bay of Fundy region in Maritime Canada. The storm had been predicted over 1 year before by a British naval officer.
Wilbur Wright pilots the Wright Flyer 3 in a flight of 24 miles in 39 minutes, a world record set in 1905. That stood until 1908.
That's longer than most flights I have.
Yeah.
The first aerial combat in World War I resulting in a kill happened on this date in 1914.
And today, in 1921, baseball's World Series is broadcast on radio for the first time.
It's a hit. The first televised White House address is given by U.S. President Harry S. Truman on October 5th, 1947.
And it's also today in 1962 that the first James Bond film series, Dr. No, was released.
And in 1966, there's a partial core meltdown at the Enrico Fermi Demonstration Nuclear Breed Reactor near Detroit, Michigan.
Turning to TV, it was today in 1969 that viewers got their first episode of Monty Python's Flying Circus. It airs on BBC. And now for something completely different.
And PBS, the public broadcasting service, is founded today in 1970.
And today in 1982, Johnson & Johnson initiates a nationwide product recall in the United States for products, all its products in its Tylenol brand after several bottles of in Chicago, was found to have been laced with cyanide, resulting in 7 deaths.
Marc Garneau becomes the first Canadian in space aboard Space Shuttle Challenger on this date in 1984.
And the first official version of the Linux kernel, version 0.02, is released in 1991.
You pronounced that one so well. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Here goes a tongue twister. Happy birthday goes out on this day to Bernard Placidus Johann Nepomuk Bolzano. Czech mathematician and philosopher, was born on this date in 1781.
And born today in 1792, English soap and alky manufacturer Joseph Crossfield was born.
Chester A. Arthur, the 21st president of the United States, was born today in 1829.
And also born today in 1864, French film pioneer Louis Lumiere. Whatever.
1882, American rocket scientist Robert Goddard is born.
And 1902, the man who gave us McDonald's restaurant. Excuse me, I was starting to think. He also gave us high cholesterol with the food chain. Ray Kroc was born.
In 1924, American cartoonist of the Frank and Ernest comic strip, Bob Taves.
And American astronaut Richard F. Gordon Jr. turns 82.
Soviet cosmonaut Pavel Popovich was born today in 1930.
Steve Miller of the Steve Miller Band is 68.
Marion from Indiana Jones movies, Karen Allen, looks great at 60 today.
Now. And Dutch astronaut André Cuypers turns 53.
And finally, the man who demoted Pluto as a planet, astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson, is also 53. And don't forget, today's World Teacher Day!
Yay.
Go shake their hand. Give them an apple or something.
Yeah, tell them Technorama said so.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for October 5th, 2011.
Bad news, everyone.
Oh, there is a little bit of bad news this week.
What's that?
First of all, I think the TV in the other room is a little loud.
Take care of that. Send him a text message.
We bid farewell, as I mentioned at the top of the show in the Media Corner thing. We bid farewell to one of the greatest physics experiments of all time. When Fermilab's Tevatron came online in 1983, it was the most powerful particle accelerator in the world. Since then, the collider has made countless contributions to the field of particle physics, the most notable being its role in the 1995 discovery of the top quark, the last of the 6 quarks in the standard model of particle physics.
There was quark, there was Rom, and there were, oh wait. Was
right. Found the other.
Ferengi.
Yeah. Now, it's offline. In 2009, the bigger, faster, and more powerful LHC at CERN superseded the Tevatron in just about every way imaginable. Since then, the LHC has largely taken over the Tevatron's search for the last remaining piece of the standard model of physics, the elusive Higgs boson. And today, owing to budgetary constraints within the U.S. Department of Energy, and that sucker eats energy.
A bit.
The Tevatron's dual particle beams were powered down. They were powered down. This was written, obviously, on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
They were powered down. Do you know how they powered it down?
Flipped a switch?
Yeah, there were basically 2 switches.
That's it. I mean, wait. They have to be like one of those big old scary sci-fi movies, you know, with the big, the dual throw.
Like the one on the
Frankenstein.
I was thinking more of, you know, Obi-Wan turning off the shield generator on the Death Star, but.
Yeah, Obi-Wan snuck in and flipped the switch and, yeah.
I've been there.
I know you've been there. I was going to guess.
It's kind of sad.
Well, why don't we listen to the audio clip? Oh, wait. You don't have any.
I was a guest. I was riding on Richard Vobe's coattails.
Yeah, Richard Vobe's recorded an interview there.
But he has no audio. He lost it somewhere. He never aired it, never found it. And I tried setting up another tour, but it never came about. So now we could go see the cold, dead remnants of a particle collider. Maybe they do tours more often.
Maybe when they turned it on, it erased his tape.
It wasn't on. It was shut down for maintenance that day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they do like a 3 day or 3 month maintenance every once in a while.
What were some of the things that you saw? Can you remember a little bit?
He walked around and he told us a lot about particle physics and dark matter, dark energy, stuff you see on science shows regularly on TV now.
Mm-hmm.
We got to go up in the Atari-shaped building and look out over the wildlife refuge with the big circle collider thing, and they showed us where the antimatter is injected into the ring, and it smashes against the thing. And then we went down the basement, and we got to see kind of we didn't get to go in the ring, but they had this small segment of like a mock-up build-up model of this segment of how things fly around.
Okay.
And then they put a mirror at the end, so it looks like it continually goes around the corner till you can't see it anymore. It's kind of cool.
It's fake.
It is fake. Yeah, like they did in the Enterprise, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, since you're the foremost expert on this. Now, there's two circles.
Yes.
Are they both? How does this work? Are they both rings that they can...
I know one of them is the matter ring, where they spin the electrons around.
It's the one that matters.
And I think the other one is the antimatter, and then they smash together.
Oh, I see. They spin around, they connect somewhere in the middle, like an 8.
Because that's how you get your collisions. You're smashing matter and antimatter together.
And let me ask you one more question, and we'll move on. Right on the bottom ring that we're looking at the picture on IO9.
Yes.
What are those little strips? It looks like water pools.
It is water. It's a wildlife refuge.
Is there a reason why there's a... It looks like a moat.
I don't know why there's a moat. Maybe that's to keep the... invading hordes away.
The orcs.
The Vikings keep invading Batavia, Illinois. I don't know.
Yeah, we keep having this problem in the spring. They decided to attack.
Yo-ho, let's go, you scurvy dogs. Oops, that's pirates, not Vikings.
Scurvy dogs. Oh, well. All right. Sorry to take so much time on that.
Hey, remember a couple weeks ago we talked about the URs falling down? Well, there's another dead satellite blindly plummeting to Earth.
Yay.
Yeah, let's have another contest. Oh, by the way, congratulations to Brad Miller. As far as we can tell, this thing came down near closest to his guess.
Yeah.
Just off the west coast of Australia. So, Brad, stop by sometime. I'll give you some useless crap from my basement.
And a beer.
Better than your... Yeah, well, since he's local, yeah, we could do that.
That's right.
So, satellites fall out of orbit all the time, and...
apparently.
Well, they do. They don't go up there and last forever.
Chuck, this is a disturbing... A trend starting to form here.
After the UR's debacle a couple weeks ago, when things fell out of the sky and they didn't know exactly where they were going, there's now a defunct German Röntgen satellite, or ROSAT, that's scheduled to crash to Earth in late October or early November. Start your bidding now. we should bid a little. We should put a stop date on that so people aren't guessing right up to the time it falls out of the sky.
Good point. I'll have to remember that next time.
The ROSAT was originally an X-ray observatory. Next week. The ROSAT was originally an X-ray observatory developed by Germany, the United States, and the UK. Launched in 1990. Its designed life was 18 months, but it functioned fully through 1994 and was only shut down for good in 1999. And now it's coming to kill us all.
Nice.
There's a lovely thought. So... For its part, the German Aerospace Agency promises to provide frequent updates similar to NASA during the UR scare, though apparently the ROSAT's orbit means it could land anywhere from Canada to South America, which sounds totally reasonable and not all incredibly horrifying to me. No, not at all. And the odds of its debris crushing a human being are less optimistic. 1 in 2,000 compared to UR's 1 in 3,200.
That's better odds for you people in Vegas.
We'll keep you posted on that one. It should be interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to set up a Google alert.
Maybe we'll get one to land in somebody's backyard like they predicted before.
Right.
Hacks and strange stories.
Oh my, it's been a good week for Technorama material, I tell you.
And this is no exception.
Among the interesting vehicles we usually get, we came across this monstrosity. If you're on the webcam, you're looking at the toilet bike Neo. Yes, it's a poop cycle.
Neo. It's about as crappy as Keanu Reeves' movie career.
It's the creation of Japan's commode king, Toto. That just sounds like an innuendo in itself.
Yeah.
And that's just about what it looks like. A toilet motorcycle hybrid that runs on human excrement. Yes, that's right. The toilet bike Neo will be conducting its roughly 500-mile trip from Kyushu to Tokyo, powered entirely by the onboard biogas digester. Now, biogas has been used, like farmers use it. They take cow manure and whatnot and
sure.
get the methane and use that to turn generators. I've heard of that before, but I've never heard of someone riding a motorcycle with a crapper on board. But in an eco-friendly environment, this makes total sense.
In all fairness, this is a trike, not a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, you are right. Looks like a piece of crap to me. Can we overdo the rim shot on this?
What kind of gas does it run on?
You'll never have to stop at a wayside. Come on, one more.
I'm trying to think of another one.
Oh, that was just a poor contest to see who could come up with the crappiest jokes.
This toilet humor is going to stop.
Yes, it does. This show has gone down the toilet.
Yeah, so has his bike.
But you know, you see something like that, and it just screams Technorama. No other podcast covers stories like us.
Yes.
And there's a good reason for it.
Hey, I think this bike can fly around Uranus.
Oh, we're going to have to wipe this up.
All right, let's just move on. Let's just forget it.
Okay. Well, because there's better stories like cyborg rats. That's right.
Oh, wait a minute. Before you get into this, you know what this reminds me of?
What?
The other day, my son had a friend over, and they're both looking at Harrison. Harrison's got a couple of books, including I got one of those worst case scenario books. You've seen those?
Yes.
Where it says how to jump out of a car, how to hotwire a car, how to, you know, break down a door, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had that book out in his, not Dangerous Book of Boys, but it's those kind of books. He has a few of those. And they were plotting on how to survive in a zombie apocalypse.
Hey, how you like that? Sounds reasonable. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I was like, this is cool. So they were like, yeah, look, this will be useful. We can jump out of a car. It's like, wait a minute.
Keep a shotgun handy. Lots of ammo.
Yeah.
Find us.
And that's the first thing I said, too. Shotgun, they look at me like, what? Okay.
All right. Mad scientists in Tel Aviv have successfully replaced a rat cerebellum with an electronic one, effectively moving the doomsday clock ahead a minute and increasing humanity's already significant fear of rodents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Matty Frankenstein Mintz of Tel Aviv University in Israel and his colleagues have created a synthetic cerebellum which can receive sensory inputs from the brainstem, a region that acts as a conduit for neuronal information from the rest of the body. Don't we sound like we know what we're talking about and we can't pronounce the words?
That's right.
Their device can interpret these inputs and send a signal to different regions of the brainstem that prompts motor neurons to execute the appropriate movement.
Kill all humans.
Such implants could eventually be used to replace areas of the brain tissue damaged by stroke or other conditions, or even enhance healthy brain function and restore learning process that decline with age. Great! I want a circuit brain when I get old and senile.
Yeah, that's what I was looking forward to. You know what this reminds me of? I swear, I say this all the time. You know that movie Deep Blue Sea? One with they inadvertently made the super smart sharks?
I haven't seen that one.
They were searching for a Alzheimer's disease cure, and then they screwed up, and they were using sharks, and they made the shark super smart.
Really?
I'm like, you know what? Maybe they should watch that movie, as bad as it was, and get a clue.
Don't
screw around with nature.
I was just going to say, don't mess with Mother Nature.
She'll kick you in the you-know-what, in the Jimmy.
Yeah, probably, literally and figuratively.
Never mind. I'm not going to even start with jokes on that.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the Media Corner.
Geek Thoughts.
In a corporation where all computers have exactly the same configuration, no two are alike. Technorama reminds you to geek responsibly by visiting chuckchat.com.
My name is Julia Pose, and I'm 11 years old. I love gymnastics and karate. I have to go to school, and I do all the other things normal kids do. But I'm more than that. I'm a geek. I listen to Technorama Podcast. It helps me to maintain my inner geek. For your own inner geek, just go to www.chuckchat.com/technorama. I'm ready for my download, Mr. Tomasi.
Hey, this is Colin Ferguson from Sci-Fi Eureka. I play Sheriff Jack Carter. And now back to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
Turn on the mute buttons. There we go. First up in the media corner, we have a series of internet or famous tech superstars as comic book characters.
Mm-hmm.
These are interesting. I got to put some of these up on the still store for you. First one up here is... After his painful initial ouster from Apple, Steve Jobs underwent a radical transformation. I should have some dramatic music behind this thing. Dun 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 yeah. dun, 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 dun. Pride and rage amplified his realistic reality distortion field and his impeccable design aesthetic into a powerful force capable of entrancing men, women, and children the world over. Now, millions of people have been filled with insatiable lust for the turtleneck tyrant's shiny tech baubles. Word has it that his secret hit squad, known as the Geniuses, schedules a visit with anyone foolish enough to resist their leader's mind-bending magic. Don't forget to...
Sir, that's always already been
done. Don't forget to read the license agreement.
Hey, he kind of looks, Steve Jobs looks like Doctor Strange or something like that.
There's another one in here for Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm. Making the Iron Man suit look at.
With the Windows logo on the front. Yeah.
That's right.
We'll read his. We won't go through all 10 or 9 of these, but there's a couple in here that are worthy.
And by the way, the one right after that was Steve Ballmer. He looks like the Hulk.
Yeah, Steve Ballmer's good. He's at the end, if I remember right.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
I gotta read Steve Ballmer's. We'll skip Gates for now.
Mark Zuckerberg, he's got a hoodie. The Zune, the Kin, Windows Vista. Well, aren't those Steve Ballmer's fault? He just really, really... He's just really, really excited about Microsoft technologies. And before you know it, he's on a CES keynote stage shouting, "Developers!" over and over again.
Developers.
He's got like an office chair in his arms.
All right, here's one that I like. The Wonder Twins here. Google co-founders Larry Page and Sergey Brin aim to solve the world's wars, inequalities, and strife by uniting everyone under the Google banner. This dynamic duo can always find whatever they're looking for, and they have an uncanny ability to manipulate the weather. Well, the cloud, anyway. Backing them up is an army of androids with a penchant for sweets.
Penchant for sweets.
Oh, ice cream sandwich.
Yeah, of course. Gingerbread.
Okay, you found this rather interesting video about Star Wars PSA for parents. Tell us about this.
I haven't seen it, but it kept, you know, CNN was going, it's viral, it's viral. So I hadn't seen it before. But yeah, there's a couple of dads on there, and they're talking about how to talk to your kids about Star Wars. And it's funny because they start talking about how to break it to it gently. And what was the one? He's got this kid's at a playground, and he's talking to the camera about not recognizing the first three or the last three episodes.
We got to watch them in order because you don't want to find out what happens to Anakin. And we're only going to watch the originals. Now, Jar Jar is not going to be mentioned in this household at all.
Yeah, that's right.
I will dress up as Jar Jar and scare my child in the night if I have to. If they ever think Jar Jar is cool, then we have problems.
Like I said, he goes, you know, my son is 5 now, so it's time for the talk.
The talk, yeah.
By the way, they have the little... the one dad has a little baby and has got
the Yoda ears on. Yeah, that's what I've got on the camera right now.
That's pretty funny.
It has like a Yoda thing on the wrist too.
Oh no. You know what? I was in the grocery store the other day and I got a couple of Star Wars t-shirts. One of them that looks like it's worn, you know, the image on it. You know, it's fairly new. I had the shirt for like a year or so.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love your shirt, man. I'm like, cool. Well, I'm in the grocery store. The bag boy is like, oh man, I love Star Wars. It's like, do you? Yeah, I like Star Wars too. And he's like, oh man, I love those movies. I wish that, and we, he starts talking about how he hadn't seen him in the theater.
Oh my.
I'm thinking, well, you know, he was probably, he's probably like two when they were re-released in the 90s, much less than 77. And, so he goes, yeah, it's so much better than that Star Wars. At least this has a storyline.
Is he talking about episode 1, 2, and 3?
Yes. I mean, he must have, but you know, I went, I'm not even going to argue. I'm just going to walk out. Just, I don't feel like putting it up with
Craig's blood pressure is going through the roof.
You know, I'm thinking, you know, Star Wars had a pretty one-dimensional storyline, where Star Trek's pretty deep. You know, there's a lot of relationship stuff there as far as, you know, everything from the social issues to relationships, you know, whatever. You have, you name it, it's there. Whales, for Pete's sake.
Although, if you start watching the Clone Wars, they're able to go all over. I think it's the difference because one had a series and one was just movies.
The cartoon?
The Clone Wars, the series is starting to get into some of that stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, that I have to say the Clone Wars is really good. I haven't watched this last season, but I really enjoyed that.
It's surprisingly
it was really good.
It's surprisingly good if you haven't watched that.
If the same people did the Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones as that cartoon with the same writers and stuff, I bet it would have been great.
Okay.
Now, I'll say this, and I mentioned this before, and of course, we invite your opinions, dissenting
or
not.
Did you say that backwards?
No, I don't know.
You said if the same people that did Phantom Menace did the cartoons?
No, I meant the people that are doing the Clone War cartoons.
Thank you.
I wish they were.
I wanted to straighten that out.
I wish they had reproduced those in the animation. What I was going to say was, I thought the story, just the story, was good for Phantom Menace and everything. It was just executed poorly.
I'm not going to argue with you there.
Yeah, I like the whole subversion thing, you know, where the Emperor's playing two parts and two pieces against each other and kind of making everything implode in his favor the whole time. That's really cool, but...
All right, we got three more things to go on. We could go on about Star Wars all night.
And then Obi-Wan. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Turning to the Geek Library, we have three things up. First, Google presents the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yes.
And I think this is awesome. It's about time. Not only did they digitize them, so there's images of these things, but you can highlight passages and it will translate them and bring them up in like a little pop-up window. Chapter 17, verse 11. In the day of thy planting, thou didst make it to grow. And in the morning, thou didst make thy seed to blossom. A heap of boughs in the day of grief and of desperate pain. Yes, I quote that
all
the time.
4 score and 7 years ago. What?
English translation of the great Isaiah scroll.
No, it's really cool. And you can zoom in and look at them really closely. I mean, you can see the cracks and the imperfections of the paper, all that kind of stuff. The parchment, whatever. Man, it's really nice.
What is the URL to get to the Dead Sea Scrolls?
It's a little strange. It's dss.collections.img.org.il.
So it's not like google.com/Dead Sea Scrolls or something?
No, Google helped out
this
facility. What's the name of this place? The Israel, some Israeli museum. And okay. The Israeli museum in Jerusalem. They helped them out in scanning them and put them online. So they're not, they had a hand in it. They didn't actually publish it themselves.
Well, it's not like a noble effort.
It's not like a Google map, you know, but it is really cool to go in there and scan, you know, slide them around, look at them, read the passages. I just thought this was amazing because this is the kind of thing the internet was made for. So everybody can get a look at this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Freedom of information. Now, what does the translation do when you hit like a hole in the parchment?
Well, I think they must know some of that stuff because I've seen some of the paper torn away, but the passage was still there. So I guess over time they kind of figured out what the words should have been there. I don't know.
We'll have to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Also in literature, we have some various books, geeky books for parents. So if you're going to grow up and if your kids are growing up and you're going to talk to them about Star Wars, you might as well introduce them to some of these books.
Hey, or if you're like mine, my kids and my kid, and you want to subvert the zombie apocalypse.
Right. Well, they should have a webpage to keep up to date. So you might want to consider getting HTML for babies. It's in one of those big thick page, you know, the books with the cardboard pages.
Right. And by the way, I like how the title is wrapped in title.
In title tags. I thought that was very creative.
Yeah.
There's Geek Mom, which has a Lego brick USB drive. Let's panic about babies. How to endure and possibly triumph over the adorable tyrant who will ruin your body, destroy your life, liquefy your brain, and finally turn you into a worthwhile human being.
Hey, my son did those things.
Captain Billy the Butcher McDougal's Guide to Pirate Parenting. Why you should raise your kids as pirates and 101 tips on how to do it.
Nice.
Sci-fi baby names. 500 out of this world baby names from Anakin to Zardoz.
Zardoz.
I was thinking Zaphod, but technically Zardoz comes after Zaphod. The Geek Dad Book for Aspiring Mad Scientists. The coolest experiments and projects for science fairs and family fun.
Hey, actually, that picture reminds me of, what's his name?
Dexter's Laboratory?
Dexter! Yes, thank you. That reminds me of Dexter. And his dad didn't know.
Get away from that capacitor!
Dee Dee!
50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Children Do. I love that title. Yeah. I am intrigued. And Bringing Up Geeks, Genuine, Enthusiastic, Empowered Kids. How to Protect Your Kids' Childhood in a Grow-Up-Too-Fast World.
Written by Susie Murph.
Just about. And speaking of written by, did you hear that? You know the old phrase, an infinite number of monkeys on an infinite number of typewriters.
Shakespeare, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, somebody wrote a virtual monkey program. I don't know if it's just like random typing or what.
You know, it's just a saying. You don't have to actually do it to see it happen.
Virtual monkeys on typewriters recreate 99% of Shakespeare. The scene from The Simpsons comes to mind. It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times.
Blurst.
Well, a new monkey Shakespeare simulator. How you write one of those, I don't know. Has risen and managed to get through a good 99% of Shakespeare's works. Why has this new challenger done so well where others have failed? There have been others?
I don't know about that.
Jesse Anderson has created a new version of the Million Monkeys on a Million Typewriters thought experiment. He has put a simulator to pound out gibberish imitating random pounding on a keyboard by monkeys in an effort to find out whether enough random typing can eventually recreate the entire works of William Shakespeare. It seems like it can.
Wait, I see the flaw in this.
What's that?
It's a serious flaw. You've seen how much trouble people have gone through throughout the ages to make computers come up with a random number, a real random number.
Yeah, you can't.
You have to add seeds and all kinds of stuff, and you get pretty close. Well, how can you guarantee that these virtual monkeys are going to be virtually typing random numbers?
Oh, therein lies the paradox.
Yeah, so just saying.
This is not the first monkey Shakespeare simulator to hit the web. That just sounds ludicrous right there.
Yeah.
But it's the most successful. The original monkey Shakespeare simulator project produced 10 to the 35 pages before it was shut down. Wow, that's a lot of printer paper.
Is it just that they want them to rewrite what he wrote, or they got to come up with some words that are as good as what he wrote?
No, they're coming up with the actual poem.
Okay.
A Lover's Complaint. The virtual monkeys have tapped out 99% of the Shakespeare's plays and have finished the poem A Lover's Complaint, which goes something like, "Wherefore am I surrounded by all these damn dirty apes?" No, not really.
I don't know. It seems a little weird for me. But anyway, hey, and that's what we're about.
Crazy tunes. Crazy tunes. All right. Hey, I got just 1 minute before we head out, and I wanted to cover one thing. I got an interesting email today that almost brought a tear to my eye. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, spit it out.
Well, you remember years ago, I used to run an electronic bulletin board. Actually, like right exactly where I'm sitting was the computer. That's kind of freaky now that I think about it.
Well, time's moved on, but you haven't.
That's right. I'm still anchored to this same spot in the basement.
Desks have all changed, but you haven't.
Sad as sad. Well, I got an email from Garrett, and Garrett writes, "Chuck, you probably don't remember me, but my name is Garrett. I used to be a user on the Enterprise Data Systems, Inc., BBS, many, many moons ago." That was my system. The Enterprise. That's right.
Hey, Enterprise, Data, I got it.
Yeah. EDSI was also an anagram, another acronym for Everybody Deserves Some Internet.
Nice.
I've been working professionally with Unix for about 17 years now, and it all started when I was using your BBS and another used me showing me how to get to the shell via VI. I've never seen Unix before, but since that moment, I was hooked. I spent the rest of my time as a youth and well into my adulthood wasting time, with my trustworthy Laser 128 and 300 baud modem. The Laser 128 was like an Apple clone, if I remember right.
I think so.
Turned into a dumb terminal, learning everything I could about Unix. My first professional job included working with Unix, and it was all Unix from there on. It dawned on me one day, just working along, going, holy crap, what am I doing wasting my time here? Oh, yeah, it's Chuck's fault.
Yeah.
It dawned on me one day.
That's pretty much of the epiphanies I have during the day. Wait a minute.
If it weren't for Chuck, I wouldn't be stuck in this rut, right?
That's right.
It dawned on me one day that if it weren't for you starting EDSI, I probably would have never been introduced to Unix. Or if I had been, it would have been much later and probably wouldn't have made such a big influence on my interests and career path. So, I wanted to send you a big thank you. I really appreciate your efforts for providing EDSI back in the day. It looks like you're still in the area. I would love to treat you to lunch sometime. Sounds like a threat, but as a small token of my not-so-small appreciation. So,
there
you go. You never know what influence you're going to have.
Your plan to take over the world has now started to form.
It started years ago.
Yeah. No, you planted the seed and it's just now coming to fruition.
It's more twisted now than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett, I'm glad I could help and I hope you enjoy your work. If not, then I apologize profusely and I'll take you to lunch.
Yeah.
Because goodness knows the BBS never paid for anything.
Now, if you go to lunch with him, you got to take a recorder.
You know, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I'd want to record the last 17 years of catching up history, but maybe a small...
And then I went to this other job and...
Yeah. No. After I learned Linux, Ubuntu, then I installed Red Hat, and whoa, that was way different.
Yeah. And that new Apple OS Liger.
Liger.
Whoa.
And cool. On that note, we're going to bring this show to an end. We appreciate your support. If you like the show, I still got the picture of the monkey on the screen. I better put my face on there so it's a better looking monkey.
No, go with the monkey.
I didn't change the picture. It's still a monkey. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. You can fling monkey poo at us. No. You can call the listener line 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428.
Shower us with money and gold.
Not monkey poo.
Yeah, not monkey poo.
Put that in the motorcycle tricycle thing. Get that guy to Tokyo faster.
Yeah.
Email us, chuckchat.com, or technorama@chuckchat.com, pardon me, or follow us on Twitter. You know all the handles, C. Tomasi, Step K, Technorama, blah, 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 blah. We appreciate everybody who's doing so. We see numerous notifications every week that say, hey, someone's following you on Twitter. It's like, that's cool. We appreciate that.
Yes.
Don't forget to retweet. There's also the tip jar and iTunes and all that good stuff. Go to the website. You'll find it out there. Special thanks to Mad Marv. That guitarist always knows as soon as I say Mad Marv, it jumps right in there.
He's awesome.
For providing the great blog content you stream, it keeps our modest live streams going on Sunday night. Oh, we're getting tired of the ads there. We're going to have to drop that one and find something to replace it. We are looking. And our chat room is still and always provided by ThinStack.net. Thank you to Steve Rinkenberg and the rest of the crew. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with Farpoint Media and a whole bunch of great podcasts over there at farpointmedia.com. Check them out. We're sure you're going to find something you like. It's good to be done once again. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. And as always, a binary high five.
Ooh, that's me. 101. Do we just keep talking or what?
He don't know me very well, do he?